These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. This is Chris Cook, your host for the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. And I got to tell you guys, I have been actually struggling with tonight's podcast. I've been trying to figure out how I wanted to approach this subject. If you listened to last night's podcast, and I hope you do, it's actually one of my best. So I'm going to have absolutely zero chance of topping it tonight. So I hope that you'll struggle through with me, because I really want to talk about this issue. One of the things about last night's podcast, and I talked about integrity, and I talked about it in three different contexts to try to give some examples of how integrity looks in three different contexts when you're looking at it, especially from a political point of view. I am a political commentator, so that's where I'm going from. And, you know, we talked about Trump. We talked about the National Republican Party, and we also talked about the Colorado GOP. And one of the comments that I made in last night's podcast, and I don't think I really fleshed this idea out, one of the comments that I made sort of offhand was that it's often hard to see problems with integrity at the local level. When you're talking about people who are right there with you, people you've shaken their hand, you know, you've looked into their eyes, maybe you've had, you know, lunch with them or dinner with them or been in an event or something like that. And I got to talking about this with a friend of mine today, and we started talking about this idea that, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, people, and she said that she had seen it. And of course, I'm talking about Marilyn Marks. And she said that she had seen this in the course of election integrity stuff, that, you know, people want to clean up elections. Of course, they believe that there's election fraud, but it does not happen in their county. It doesn't happen with their clerk. You know, oh, she's been our clerk for, you know, 40 years. Of course there's no election fraud happening in our county. You know, people don't see that. It's the same kind of effect. You know, you have folks who have kids in school, and they say, you know, well, yeah, of course, you know, teachers in general, they've got problems, but not my kid's teacher. My kid's teacher is awesome. You know, people never see this stuff when it's up close and personal. And I asked Marilyn as we were talking, I said, you know, so what is the effect that's going on here? And we talked about it a little bit, and we finally decided, I think, that it's simply an unwillingness to confront, an unwillingness to say, okay, my teacher's got problems. And then I've seen folks, and I've seen parents who have definitely, you know, pushed back on teachers and that kind of thing. But I think a lot of times when you hear that effect, it's a lot of times not wanting to point out the flaws in somebody that you are so close to and somebody who has so much power over you. Same thing happens with the election integrity. I want to volunteer, but I don't want to do it in my county where they can mess with my vote. I don't want to do it here where I can be targeted. I'll go over to Boulder and do it, or I'll go over to Adams, or I'll go to Jeffco or Dougco. You know, people are more than willing to be part of the solution as long as they're not going to be targeted when that happens. And that is a completely understandable reaction. I have to say that is a completely understandable reaction. I mean, why would you want to jeopardize your own vote? Why would you want to jeopardize your kids' schooling by criticizing, publicly criticizing the teacher? You wouldn't want to do that. I think we're seeing a lot of the same thing. And this is going to be a very locally focused podcast because I'm talking about this subsidiarity deal and how we have to keep our local elected officials accountable. And that includes the party. So I want to focus on the party. And it's not so much that I'm focusing on the whole let's get Steve House out thing. You guys all know where I stand on that. I'm not gonna belabor that fact. But I'm using that as the most current, the most visible example to most people who are probably listening to this podcast and get it, that holding our local elected officials accountable is key, absolutely, positively key to this entire concept of the republic. It's easy to hold our president accountable. He is so far away and so abstract that that's an absolutely easy target to hit, you know? And of course, our current president is doing so many things wrong that he offers a wealth of opportunity to be able to do that. But the office of the president of the United States is an abstract concept. Our senators and our congressmen, less abstract. Again, perhaps you've been to an event where they've been at, you cast a vote for them, you've been hit up for fundraisers and donations over and over and over again, that kind of thing. But still, for most people, our congressmen, our senators are very much of an abstract type of concept because they are so far away. And they're so much further up the chain, I think, as I know that I conceptualize it. We also have, of course, you know, our more local elected officials. We've got our state legislature, we've got our governor, and then you come down to the cities and that kind of thing, and you know, we're talking about councilmen who may be a neighbor, you know, people who you see in the grocery store, people who maybe you attend church with. And so when you start getting into those personal relationships with folks and you start getting to the point where, you know, you actually know them, you know their kids, maybe your daughter babysat for them or, you know, something like that, and you've got these personal relationships going, do we then abdicate our need to hold them accountable in the name of that personal relationship, in the name of civility, in the name of whatever? You know, I mean, do we abdicate that responsibility to hold our local officials accountable? Do we abdicate the necessity of holding our state elected officials accountable simply because we know them? Now, hopefully we are civil about it. And there's going to be two sides to this whole thing. One is that we need to engage in that accountability with a level of civility that allows us to do that. I know that I've had very close friendships throughout my life. You know, people that I absolutely love and adore, people I'm very close to. And if I am doing something wrong, if I am not upholding my own integrity, if I am doing something that necessitates a correction, I want those people to come to me and say, you're not thinking this whole thing through. You're not putting this all together. You're not being who the best person that we know that you can be. And here's why. And engage me civilly and with an eye towards my own benefit, then I'm going to listen to that person. And I want them to come to me with that. If I'm really, really showing my petticoats here, I really want to see that happen. I want somebody, if I've got spinach between my teeth, I want somebody to tell me. That's the way that we improve. That is how we continue to evolve as human beings. If we've set up that kind of relationship, if we have set up that kind of trust between us, then we can have those conversations. And as a society, I mean, if that's repeated, you know, millions of times over, as a society, we get better because it's often easier to see the mote in your neighbor's eye than it is to see the plank in your own, right? So being able to point that out and have them point out to you and having that kind of trust that says, you know, this can be improved. You're really going off the rails here. This is not a good place for you to go. You do not want to go down that path. Having that kind of trust, absolutely critical. Absolutely critical. And I'm talking about that at every level. At every level, we need to have that kind of a conversation and the ability to have that conversation and the ability to have it in a civil manner that does not include logical fallacies, that does not include ad hominem attacks, that does not include throwing out made up things and calling them facts and then decrying other people because they don't believe in your facts, things like that. You know, we need to be able to have that kind of dialogue and be able to engage in this. The other side of this is an intellectual honesty idea. And this totally goes back to what I was talking about last night with integrity. Intellectual honesty is part of integrity. It really is. And it involves a complex, what I think is a fairly complex thinking process where you step outside of the idea, you let go of the ego attachment to whatever it is, whatever idea it is that you're looking at right then, and say, okay, that's not my idea. Even if it is my idea, I'm saying that's not my idea. I am not so invested in that idea. Is it the right idea? And being able to assess that, being able to look at that. I'm getting really abstract here, aren't I? So for example, and let's just talk about the Steve House thing for a second. Now, I have invested a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of emotion, and a lot of my life, unfortunately, has been taken apart because I have this idea that Steve House needs to step down. He needs to resign from his office. Okay, so that's the idea. I have what I believe is a lot of evidence that supports that. There are many other people who have what they believe is a lot of evidence that refutes that, that he's doing a great job, that he's, you know, highly competent, you know, whatever. And so I've spent a lot of time over the last couple months looking at my side, looking at my body of evidence, looking at what they're bringing forward and weighing those two things. And regardless of the personal sacrifice, regardless of the fact that I lost my microphone, regardless of the friendships that I've sacrificed and the things that have gone on, I have looked at that concept. The concept being Steve House needs to resign. That is my opinion. Is it the right opinion? And looking at these bodies of evidence to try to determine that. Same kind of thing that I do with my job, where I look at accounting evidence and I look at you know, the books and I look at the documentation and I read the emails and I read the depositions and I look at this body of evidence and I come up with an opinion and then I go back and I assess that. Is this opinion supported by all of the documentation that I'm seeing? Or is there another explanation? Is there something that I'm missing? Is that what's going on? It's a thought process, obviously, that I've developed in large part because of my decade in forensics and doing what I do for a living. It has become second nature to detach myself from an idea, and it doesn't make me perfect at it. Boy, does it not make me perfect at it. I can't even tell you how much I'm not. But it is part of my being. To detach myself from the idea, from the opinion, from the thing it is that I'm putting forward and saying, stepping back and assessing it from as objective a point of view as I possibly can. And trying to determine, is that the right opinion? Am I holding the right opinion that Steve House should step down? Am I holding the right opinion that, you know, XYZ defendant has committed fraud? I never actually say that because that's not my determination to make, but that there appears to be a misappropriation of, you know, the hundreds of thousands of dollars or something like that. Is that the right opinion? And that detaching and assessing and looking at the entire thing, it's a really important maturity type of an idea that we need to apply. And I can't urge you enough, especially as we are the reason why is because I think that as the Liberty Movement, we're the grown-ups in the room. We are the grown-ups in the room. We need to act like we're the grown-ups in the room. We need to be able to look at our opinions, make sure that they're supported by facts and evidence, and then put them forward with that sort of an objective look. I've got this evidence. This is what it says. Perspective. That, especially within the Republican Party, within the fights that we have within the Republican Party. I mean, part of the charm of being a conservative is that you're always going to find things to fight about. We are so independent-minded. But part of it is that we need to be the grown-ups in the room. We need to be able to approach these issues with an objective viewpoint, lay out the evidence, be willing to hear where we're wrong, be open to hearing where we're wrong, and then moving forward from there to pursue the thing that is the right thing. That's what we need to be able to do. So when we come back, I want to kind of tie this into an article that I found recently. And the article is Why Smart People Defend Bad Ideas. And so maybe this will help as we go through these four reasons. I'm hoping that you'll incorporate this into your thinking and think about your thinking, sort of a meta thinking type of a concept. Think about your thinking. Think about your opinions and be able to step back maybe from an objective point of view, look at some of these things and maybe reassess how you are reacting and how you are moving through the political world. So we'll talk about that in a minute when we come back. Kevin MacLeod, that is a tune called Slow Burn. You can find that at freemusicarchive.org. Do check out that site. It's really, really cool. There's some fun music that you've never heard before. It's really a great thing. I am Chris Cook. I am your host. You're listening to the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado. And we're talking about how smart people defend bad ideas. And for anybody who's listening to this thinking, oh, crap, she's talking about me. Well, I'm not specifically targeting anyone. There are some folks that I've run into on Facebook over the past few days that maybe we've had disagreements. But that doesn't mean that that's not what I'm aiming at. This podcast, in fact, is probably more about me than anything else. It's hard to have intellectual integrity. It really is hard to walk that walk and to do that. It's hard for so many reasons, not the least of which is that you get your ego invested in these ideas, in your opinions, and you get your ego invested in this, and it's really hard to extract it. And if you find out that you're wrong, if you find out that you've somehow made a miscalculation, somehow you've come down on the wrong side of an issue, somehow something did not work right, how do you extract yourself from a position that you've taken publicly and do it without losing face? That's really, really hard. That is incredibly, incredibly hard. I mean, it's not so bad when you just make a small mistake or something and you correct it on the next broadcast or on the, you know, the next, you know, whatever. You go up to the person and say, you know what? I had that wrong. You were right. That's not, you know, and especially in private, that's not such a big deal. But in this day of social media and in how we tend to prosecute our political ideas, especially, and we're, you know, very opinionated about this, as you can witness when you see these threads that go into thousands of comments. It's hard to extract yourself from a position that you've taken that maybe you find out is wrong. And so a lot of people just say, you know what, that's my opinion, I'm going to stick with it, and I'm not going to re-examine it. And I think that's dangerous. I really do believe that that's dangerous. We always need to be constantly reevaluating our ideas against the available evidence, against new things that come to light, against old things that maybe we hadn't paid any attention to. We always need to be looking at these things so that we can have that intellectual honesty and we can have that intellectual integrity to know that we are standing on the side of truth and righteousness, basically. And so that's why I'm urging you to do this. Now, this article that I ran across, and this is a great article, and it's from a blog. I'm not even actually sure how I found this, which is one of those things. This is not a blog that I read, but the blog is Scott Berkun, as ScottBerkun.com. It's number 40, apparently, in his blog series called Why Smart People Defend Bad Ideas. And it was published 10 years ago, so this isn't new stuff. Obviously, I think the ancient Greek philosophers were talking about this same kind of process 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. So, you know, this is not a new thing. But I liked this article because I thought the points that he brought out I thought were great. There's a couple. He has four reasons here that smart people defend bad ideas. The first one is that they have experienced success at defending bad ideas in the past. Yes, I've known people like this. I have been people like this at times. If you can defend your ideas, if you find out that you are actually smarter than the rest of the people in the room and that you could pretty much sell them on anything if you make it sound authoritative enough, if you do that enough, it becomes a habit. It really does. And being able to surgically dissect somebody else's poorly put together argument, even if they are the ones who are right, if you can dissect it and annihilate it and surgically remove it, then you're going to, just because you can. Just because you can. You know, that's part of sometimes the fun of arguing. And yes, I admit it. I'm going to admit it right now. I do enjoy arguing. I do enjoy the process of debate. I enjoy analyzing ideas and analyzing arguments and you know, figuring out, is there a logical fallacy? That kind of mental exercise to me is incredibly stimulating. That is what I do. And I do it in all of the areas of my life. Yes, I know I keep going back to my day job, but my day job, a lot of it is about this. About the most fun you can have with your clothes on is to have an opposing expert send you a report that is such crap that you just take it apart, and I mean eviscerate it. You absolutely write the report that puts theirs to shame. Absolutely to shame. It's even more fun to do that on the stand. But, you know, that kind of thing, being able to do that kind of thing, it's intellectually stimulating. It really is. And to feel that kind of power, to feel that smartness because you're able to do that, you know, that is, it's an addictive feeling. It truly is. But if you're on the side of the wrong idea, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous because you're defending and successfully defending a bad idea. So again, if you find like me that you get sucked into these things sometimes and you're really good at taking apart the other side, step back and make sure that the idea that you are defending is the right one. That has got to be something that you guard against. If you're like me and you like that process, you have to be doubly on guard to make sure that that's what's happening. The second reason that this author gives for why smart people defend bad ideas, he calls it death by homogeny. And basically he's talking about groupthink here, which I think is really interesting. You know, there's sort of a common wisdom that if you get one smart person in a room, great. If you get 10 smart people in a room, you're going to get better ideas, 10 times as good as just the one smart person, right? Doesn't work that way. Look at Congress. So, you know, we know that this is not, it's not a valid concept, but when you're involved in an organization, For example, the GOP, okay, the Colorado GOP, and you're involved in this organization, and you get pulled in, for example, to be part of a, you know, an advisory group or something, and the idea is that, you know, you have all these smart people in this room, and so therefore you're going to get that much smarter ideas, that much better advice. Guard against groupthink. Guard against saying that, yes, this is the right idea because 20 other people have agreed to it. Yes, this is the right idea because that seems to be the general reading of the room. Think for yourself. Think for yourself. Don't go along with the crowd. Don't assume that because 23 other members of the XCOM are saying something, that you're one dissenting vote is the wrong one. Don't assume that. Maybe they don't have all the facts. Maybe they haven't looked at the issue from an objective standpoint. Maybe they haven't injected some sunshine and some air into this entire thing. The key on this, in this type of situation, I know we've all found ourselves in those situations. Any of you who are a member of the Central Committee and are going down to Pueblo on September 26th, you're going to find yourself in this type of a situation where you're hearing stuff going on all around you and you're thinking, well, maybe I need to go along with the crowd. Don't assume that. Be willing to have the political backbone. Be willing to have the intellectual backbone to look at your ideas objectively, to understand and weigh the evidence and realize where you are. And to say, you know what, it's hard to say this in this group, but I really think all of you are wrong, and here's why. And again, we can do it civilly. We can do it with an amount of statesmanship when you find yourself confronted with that situation, but it needs to be done. If your idea is right and their idea is wrong, even if you're outnumbered, you need to understand that you can and should stand up for that idea because it is right. Here's one. The third one in this list is one that I know I'm guilty of, and I'll tell you how I know. What he calls it is thinking at the wrong level, where you're thinking about, for example, one of the examples that he gives is somebody who has lots of money, and yet they're always worried about money. You know, they're thinking at the wrong level. They're thinking about trees and not about the forest. You know, something else, another example that he gives is, for example, in the software industry, you get 10 really awesome coders into a room, but they have no idea what to code. And so they put together programs. They have no idea if anybody can actually use them. It's just whatever comes to mind. Instead of stopping, taking a second, taking a week, hiring somebody in who maybe isn't an awesome coder, but who actually knows how to read the market, it's thinking at the wrong level. They're thinking about trees and not about the forest. When we decided, and I think we applies very broadly here, we decided that Ryan Call was no longer somebody who should be at the head of the Colorado GOP. Our thinking was simply about the tree. Get Ryan Call out of office. Very simple. We did not search for other alternatives. We did not adequately vet our candidate. We did not do the things that needed to be done if we had been thinking at the right level, which would have been, what is the best thing for the Republican Party? What is the best thing for conservatives to win in 2016? That was the level that we should have been thinking at. But the level that we were thinking at was get Ryan Call the hell out of office. That kind of thinking ends you up in a situation that we're looking at right now, where you have somebody who I believe is not competent, somebody who does not have the integrity needed in order to run this party, and is because we failed to see the full array of options in front of us. We failed to pursue the avenues that we needed to pursue in order to ensure the safety of the mission itself, because we were thinking at the wrong level. This piece, thinking at the wrong level, this goes directly to wisdom. Wisdom as opposed to intelligence. Wisdom is thinking at the right level. Wisdom is understanding the bigger picture. Wisdom is moving forward in a way that ensures that the future results of the actions you're taking right now have been thought through, and that those results that will result from these actions will serve the mission that you're looking to achieve. That's wisdom. We didn't have it. At the beginning of this year, we did not have it. And we're paying the price. Now we're paying the price. And now it's a big fight, and now everybody's mad, and now everybody's fighting, and, you know, you can go on and on and on. I think there's been a lot of personal sacrifice that has been put forward in this, but I think a lot of it is attributable to this specific thing, thinking at the wrong level. You've got to see the forest. We have got to see the forest, and you've always got to be looking at that forest, not just at the trees. This was the other problem that we had back in January when we started looking at this election for the chairmanship. Killed in the long term by short-term thinking. Gee, you think? I think that's exactly what happened. Again, wanted to get Ryan Call out, wanted to get him out at any cost. He was dangerous to the Liberty Movement. We knew that he was dangerous to the Liberty Movement. There was nothing we could do to push back on him except for get him out of office. And so that was our goal. That was our single goal. Our single goal was not to replace Ryan Call with somebody who was fully vetted, who was going to be able to achieve the mission in 2016. Now, I'm not saying that we went into this thinking, well, he's just an alternative. We did go into this thinking that Steve was the person who was going to bring in the Liberty Movement. I don't know how many times I said on my show, he is the guy who's going to be able to unify us. Really turned out to be wrong on that one, but he is the guy who's going to be able to unify us. I mean, I was willing to be fooled more than anything. I was willing to be fooled. I was willing to look at what I was being presented with and not question it. I will never do that again. The price has been too high. And for that, shame on me. You know, but I will never, never do that again. We were killed in the long term by short-term thinking. We needed to reconsider what our options were and whether or not we could actually find a better candidate. So those four pieces, I think it's interesting to break down what we're doing when we're thinking. I think one of the missions of my life is to get people to think, you know, just think. You can disagree with me anytime you want to. If you can defend your position from a thoughtful perspective and do it with a civil tone, you can disagree with me all day long. I have liberal friends that, you know what, we don't agree on anything politically, but we have the best discussions about politics because we know that each of us is coming from a different premise. We're able to explore that and do it civilly and do it with an eye towards, you know what, we're not going to agree on this, but we're going to understand our own ideas even better because we've been challenged. And I would hope that everybody goes into these types of discussions and goes into these types of interactions with that thought process. Be willing to be challenged and be willing to defend your position, not in a vitriolic way, not by going off like an atom bomb, but by defending your position from a thoughtful perspective. It says, okay, I believe this. Here's why. And lay out the evidence, and then listen to the objections to the evidence. Listen to people saying, okay, well, I see A, B, and C, but X is wrong. And that is the sole reason that that opinion is supported. So if X is wrong, your opinion's wrong. And be willing and open to hear that kind of challenge. If you're not, don't engage until you can. Don't engage until you can leave the emotion aside and talk about the idea. Talk about the issue. And see if that doesn't change the tone of your interactions, the interactions of others that you see on the internet, you know, in person, at the Central Committee meeting, wherever it is. Let's talk about the issues. Let's talk about the issues and let's talk about the evidence. And then let's come to an understanding that, okay, you believe X, I believe Y. Here's why we differ. And see if that doesn't really change how you engage in politics. It doesn't all have to be an emotional roller coaster. It doesn't all have to be so uncivil. It doesn't have to be us at each other's throats all the freaking time. It can actually be fun. I remember I got into politics because it was fun. Boy, am I sick. I mean, come on. And I bet you got into it for the same reason, and you're finding that you've been sucked in now, and now you don't know why you do it anymore, except that you feel like you have to save the country. Let's find the fun again. That's how you find the fun. Let's exercise our brains. Let's exercise our statesmanship skills and figure out how to have these conversations where we're not at each other's throats, where we're actually discussing the issues. Wouldn't that be awesome? Okay, maybe I'm being an idealist again. I don't know, but I have some faith. You guys, thank you so much for joining me this evening. And remember to share the podcast, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. Podcast is at grrc.podomatic.com. Email me, Chris, K-R-I-S, @grassrootsradiocolorado.com. Love to hear from you. And I will be back tomorrow evening. But until then, remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.